Hey, and welcome to the Design Podcast. I'm your host, Ashton Snook, and we're on a mission to share the creator's voice. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave us a star rating. Today, we're joined by Nicola Miranda, an award-winning art director, interactive designer, and creative developer based in Amsterdam, who shaped iconic digital experiences for the likes of Prada, Kanye West, and Roger Federer. He's a rising star in the design community, with many of his projects reaching acclaim on awards, including his own portfolio site, The Paper Portfolio. Nicola, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Ash. Thanks for having me.
Well, it was a pleasure. Thanks for taking time. I know you've got a hectic, busy schedule. And you know, we're super excited. Myself, my brother who edits the show, big fans of the work you're producing. And I think for many of the listeners, people can be very familiar because of the exposure you've had on awards. You know, in particular, like your most recent stuff. Well, for me anyway, and what we've seen with your personal portfolio has been really cool to see you kind of push again, like what we can do with web design. So yeah, we're super excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So we're gonna take a look at trying to unlock some of the secrets behind your success, right? And I think for many of our listeners, they're typically practicing designers or people super interested in the craft or, you know, and a bunch of leaders who are interested in this. But your work, like I say, has been really successful. And I think it, you know, for me, it's also a personal inspiration. So selfishly, I'm going to try and like unlock your secrets as well. Before we kind of get into all that good stuff, I always like to kick off the show with understanding like your grassroots, like how you kind of got into this space. So can you take us back to your earliest memory? What inspired you about design and particularly web, and how did you get into this scene?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually like fell in love with design about 5 years ago. I basically like starting from the start. I grew up and was born in Italy in a simple but artistic and lovely environment. I've been incredibly fortunate in having grown up on all kinds of kinds of pictorial arts as a kid. My father was like a classical painter up to 90s. So while in school, I basically began passionate about photography. So I started basically out to be like an observer, and doing a bit of illustration. When I enrolled inside the university, I basically signed up for, 3 years computer science degree. And, I thought basically I appreciate the tireless beauty of internet things, I would say. I started to get tired about the medieval, Italian school method. So I started to travel abroad, Patagonia, Iceland, Norway, beautiful place around the world. And, I have this base memory, when like basically in 2015, I was at the Strand bookstore in S Village in New York. And I was looking at photography book when I came across, a basket full of digital design books. And, I basically spent 2 hours there without realizing, flipping through Gandaro pages. I was like blown away by the beauty of digital art. And from there, I basically I practice every day trying to, you know, learn from the best in the industry, looking around to, you know, a wide range of visual arts as architecture, design, photography, gaming. So basically, I take inspiration basically from everywhere, trying to basically find a good balance between an appealing design and always a straightforward functionality.
Nice. And which I think is already interesting as well, because you kind of touched on it going back to studying like computer science. And then what I think is really interesting about you, right, is there's not many designers who are also developing their own work. And particularly, I know you're doing like very nice bespoke craft websites. And the great thing is that you're able to bring your ideas to life and code stuff up. And I can kind of see that now going back. I didn't realize you'd studied software engineering, and then finding that passion was, you know, only 5 years ago you kind of got into design, which is no time really.
Yeah. It's not a lot actually, but I spend a lot of times understand what kind of path I would like to follow, back in 2015, in 17 actually. But yeah, as an hybrid digital thinker, I think that you need to handle a lot of things. It's kind of struggling sometimes. Because alone you need to, follow up a lot of things. Visual strategy, little bit of marketing, project management, design, development, QA testing. So it's kind of like a big responsibility, but it's everything for me. It's it's my passion in general. My teacher in the high school told me every day I wake up, I'm very lucky and I'm very fortunate. I'm very happy because I love to teach students. And when basically like someone get up and, you know, wake up every morning doing what they love, it's incredible. It's amazing. And I mean, I feel very fortunate, and I'm really lucky, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're fortunate as well in the industry as well for having, you know, people like yourself bringing this sort of passion to it, because it's what we need, right? And I think what's really interesting about your portfolio is that I came across your work maybe back in 2020, and I thought, oh, like Nicola's doing some really cool stuff. I'll keep an eye and see what you produce. And every year I keep seeing like more, a greater volume of work coming out. And you know, what's really interesting, we touched on it previously, is your personal portfolio. I mean, the amount of response I think you've seen from peers in the industry, right? Like it's got a lot of noise around it. And you've taken something like the idea of an old print magazine and that, you know, your illustrations on, brought it into digital. And it's just, it makes digital products fun. And that's, you know, that's cool for us as well, I think, to see. So
absolutely, absolutely. I thought 2.5 years ago about like a newspaper portfolio. I released back in 2017 my first basically portfolio experiment. Was like my very, very first work. I'm a big fan of cinema in general. It's my passion. I mean, I'm a big fan also of Harry Potter, and I always like fell in love and be very interesting about like all the animation about the newspaper. The portfolio is basically like inspired by the Daily Bugle of Spider-Man by Sam Raimi.
I see that now.
And then also the newspaper of like the Daily Prophet of Harry Potter. So I basically like spent a lot of time, like a bunch of time struggling actually with developing kind of like an informative portfolio that could be visually appealing. And I solve actually a lot of problems. For me, like solve problems is better to find new ideas because you can understand what actually you did wrong and what actually you can do better. And with the portfolio was like quite a challenge, because actually designing something that it's basically editable from like a backend perspective without blank spaces, because actually you are talking about newspapers, so you don't have basically, blank spaces, was kind of like a challenge, but it was really fun. And, mixing up, bespoke illustration that my big time friend, Michael Nardoni did, mixing up animation, WebGL, trying to find like the right path to build an entire direction based on functionality, because we are talking about web. I mean, like when you talk about like a painting, you can give to it like kind of your perception, meaning, right? But when we talk about web, it need to be functional over different functionalities. So it was kind of a challenge, but it was really fun, and get a lot of positive feedback, and make my day for sure.
Yeah, it's really cool work, and I can totally see those references now between Spider-Man and Harry Potter. I get that. That's cool. Cool. Your own work's something, right? And I always think when you create your own portfolio as a creative, like it can almost be the more, almost not the single greatest challenge, but it's something about working for yourself. I've always found, and I speak with a lot of friends and peers in design as well, and you become your own worst client, right? Which is a bit of a challenge. But what I think would be kind of interesting to explore, and again, just looking at your body of work and the fact that I know you've done a course on awards as well on your design process, would be to get a sense of how do you kickstart a project with one of your clients, right? How do you begin to look at a brief and move through the design process, particularly as someone who does both the creative work, the project management, the engineering, all of that stuff? So I'd love to unpack a little bit of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's something I also like mentioned at recently at the awards conference in Amsterdam. It's from like a personal creative process. I like to think from like a three pillars, UX pillars perspective. It's basically knowledge, problem solving, and communication. When I talk about knowledge, I think at basically every designer, even if, I mean, everyone is an artist in one way or another for me. Knowledge is probably like the power of culture and how basically you how it shapes the way you create things. So having kind of like a wide knowledge about architecture, design, gaming, fashion, cooking also, I think they are kind of like a step to empower basically your creativity and enhance and embrace probably like an elevate process to do things. Secondly, for sure, like problem solving. As I mentioned before, I like more like to basically like solve problems rather than like find new ideas, probably because like as an hybrid, my brain is like split up between like logic thinking and like creative thinking. So I think that understanding that find new problem is better than find new ideas in general. So I like to basically create a very like wide visual strategy to understand what it works, what is not working, and also like thinking from like a long term strategy where basically the client can basically scale like that thing. So it's something that probably I'm still practicing. So I don't think that you need to stop. Actually, you don't need to settle ever. But it's something that when I started, I didn't have like that kind of knowledge to do so. So I guess that basically also like failures and, you know, trying to do things and also like publishing and get feedback is very important, like to understand how you can basically solve all that problems. Lastly, probably communication. When I mention communication, it's not just like communicate things, but also like a better way to basically organize project and communicate in a good way with clients, with visual mood boards, with the team. So I guess that all these three pillars can basically elevate your thinking in general and, you know, elevate your creative skills.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I totally forgot, of course, you gave it a talk at Awards, but I remember seeing that on social media as well, which is cool. I love that. Sort of three distinct areas, knowledge, I guess that diversity of bringing all those inspirational points in, problem solving element, and communication is really key. And I think communication actually is one of those areas that when I work with, in the last few years, I've been building out teams for a variety of brands, right? And I always feel one of the gaps that many designers and particularly software engineers have is probably the lack of ability at many times to communicate their ideas. Now you mentioned mood boards, but I think a lot of it's probably also your personality and the way that you're conversing. What are some of the methods that you feel work really well for clients? Have you got general go-tos, like a mood board always a good way to engage, or do you feel like you're tailoring it depending on the client and their characteristics?
Good question. I think that one of the main thing here is like to basically first understanding the context. Because if you understand the context, then it means that basically you can gather the right ideas to show to the clients, firstly. Secondly, I guess that the resources and the way you see things and you search for things are very important. I'm talking about tools. I'm talking about like, you know, a wide range of visual arts knowledge. All these kind of things, I think, are very important basically to gather the right ideas. And if you gather the right ideas, that means that the client can understand your vision before you create things. And then obviously it helps. I also like do think that, sometimes like, you know, agencies and like freelance doesn't say, okay, I'm a designer, so I don't care about like development, or I don't care about motion, I don't care about 3D. And I think that you should have one only focus. So it's good if you basically commit yourself as a designer or like a developer or like a project manager, but having like a wide of knowledge about like different fields can help you basically to understand yours. So keywords also like are important. If you search for the right keywords on Google and if you have a knowledge about that, I think it will help basically on how you can search things and how you can gather ideas. In a visual mood board, I usually also like use like diagram flows and UX pillars or like development effort stars. I also like put description inside. So basically the client can understand better how you elaborate ideas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it makes sense though, understanding how to draw inspiration in an effective way and then verbalize it and obviously visualize it in a lot of your work and the way you communicate is it makes a lot of sense. And it's actually really interesting as well, because you kind of see my experience of doing a mixture of different like roles, from like doing freelance to in-house to agency side. I feel creative work and visualization typically works much better from an agency point of view or a consultant. They typically will spend more time in a design process looking for inspiration and pulling it in. But I've noticed over the last sort of 7 or 8 years working predominantly for bigger and bigger brands, that the design process gets broken down into agile workflows, and that actually that idea of sort of creative discovery and communication gets lost, and the designer is more focused on efficiency than exploration and then ideation. And I think that's what's really interesting about your work, and particularly the way you're kind of explaining it is, you know, you're having to think across these different skills. Again, you're saying like you can be an expert in one area, but you know, get a broad sense of ideas. And I kind of really ask that, because I feel that we're a lot of in-house teams are missing that sense of discovery that you're kind of explaining.
Yeah, and it's very simple actually. You don't need to be like super skilled. You just basically to understand what's like the right way to structure your process. And from like a design perspective, for me, like I mean, like Node Ending and like designing for code, it's very important, because if you have knowledge in development, even if you're not a developer, it's very important, because you avoid any back and forth when it comes inside sharing the work with, you know, the team. So
yeah.
Usually a design team and development team works together. So the design team works first, then they start in like to share basically like the work, the half of the project, to see any, you know, restriction when it comes inside, you know, libraries and, you know, WebGL, 3JS, GZOP. So everything that's concerning like restriction in terms of like functionality. And so if you're basically have that knowledge, you can avoid, and you can basically avoid the waste of time. So it means that it's also like rewarding for like agencies or freelance, because you can like spend first like less money. And secondly, you can basically like avoid any waste of time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, look at design in itself, the big thing of any experience, whether it's digital or physical, is like this idea of communication, right? And the exchange of that product being really successful between a brand and a consumer is often how good the communication is between the internal teams. And I think you can see certain companies that have very bad structures and communications, and that's reflected in their products.
Absolutely.
And small, nimble teams most of the time, or even really big brands like Apple, they get it right. You know, somehow that communication is consistent, and then you feel that as an end user, which is really cool. Now, you know, again, I'm just like, you know, think about your portfolio of work and kind of bladdering into this. Each of your projects has a really distinct character, right? And you know, I'm hearing these sort of inspiration points from many different angles in your personal life and working with clients. But what I think really works with the work is they've got, you know, a distinct identity, which you'd expect, but it seems to connect, and you bring together this mixture of great typography, graphic design, 3D modeling into your products. How do you, I think we've kind of built into this, but how do you start to unpack what the brand is really trying to represent, and how do you translate that into one of these digital experiences?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, every digital thinkers have like their own signature. If you think about Bruno Rizzio, or I don't know, like Zanio Rinzuk, Ben Mingo. I mean, I think that everyone, Claudio Guglieri also is an amazing designer. I think that, I mean, everyone, they have like their own signature. And I mean, I don't think there is like kind of like the correct answer here. There is no secret ingredients. I think that the process of the strategy behind is probably like an answer. Like trying to understand that, you know, like if we need to define in general, like a great design, I would say, I mean, when we're talking about web, we're not just talking about art in general. So it's not like a painting that you can admire and say, okay, I give in my own meaning. But we're talking about more like digital art that has like a functionality. So basically some of the key elements for me, like to deliver probably like a good design, is firstly aesthetics. So basically like a good understanding of typography and fonts, the use of colors and the psychology behind it, the use of good content like, you know, photography, illustrations and icons. Secondly, for sure, like functionality. So like play a key role in the user experience, probably like the ability of the product to achieve its goals and user engagement. The usability, for sure, like a clear and intuitive like interface that allow users to accomplish their tasks efficiently. What else? I think like responsiveness, also like a great digital design. So if it's a responsive, meaning it looks and functions well on different devices. Brand consistency, for sure. Because great digital design, I think that is consistent with a company's brand and communicates also like the desired brand identity and message. So you can basically like scalable that art direction over time if there is consistency. And there is consistency if there is like a research behind. So you can immediately like understand if you look at a website or if you look at like, yeah, like a graphic or if you look at a big project, if there is basically like research and strategy behind. And lastly, also like QA testing. So if we talk about web, obviously you need to take care about meta description, title tags, performances, you know, PWAs, accessibility, best practices. So I guess that QA testing is like kind of like a, you know, the closing loop to deliver, you know, a functional product.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's, that's what's, I think really important is that end-to-end sort of focus, right? Which I think, again, you know, being this hybrid creative and engineer makes a lot of sense. And I kind of feel that we see a lot of work that, you know, the larger the company, the more complicated it is really to bring products to market most of the time. But certainly, you know, I think there are a lot of designers still, which I've always found quite amazing, who see, you know, one of those sort of five, six steps you're sort of articulating to their area of focus, and then it gets handed off to another person in the business. But I think what I've seen is this idea of being a custodian of the idea. And if you're not necessarily producing the work, you know, taking it into the front end or to the back end and then working through the quality assurance to distribute it across multiple platforms or whatever the cycle might be, is the idea of being a sort of custodian through the continuous evolution of that product until we get it into market, which I think when you're, you know, working on products like you do, which are really exciting and you're going to get that end-to-end view, it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
But something that we don't do and probably don't see enough of still in industry, and I always find that quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's a good, very good point. I think that having recently it's fun because recently I am totally involved in Web3 NFTs and I actually like I'm developing my own brand, my own project, and it's kind of crazy because I never basically like get practice with marketing, business plans, pitch deck, investors. And I actually find out something very interesting that sometimes if you design something and if you basically don't think from like a marketing strategy perspective, you are missing something.
Yeah.
So even if you actually like work within a team or you work as a studio or you work as a freelance or you work whatever, the marketing perspective plays a very key role in what you design. Because when I actually started, I made a lot of mistakes, like everyone, and I'm still doing it and I'm still like learning from it. But having like this like marketing like knowledge and like understand the market, it's very important because probably it could shape the way you create things. And so I think that it could be kind of like an answer, like understand like marketing and, you know, building experience with like, you know, marketing in mind.
Yeah, you're totally right, Nicola. I mean, I've worked with a few teams over the last few years. And what's really interesting is, and actually you kind of hear this when you speak with designers who've probably got sort of 20, 30 years experience, right? They understand that you reach a certain point and you need to understand the business in itself. And we spoke with Martin Lotti, who's the chief designer over at Jordan, part of the Nike Inc. group, or Nike Incorporated. And, you know, he's been very successful. He's been there for like 2.5 decades. And, you know, a few years ago, he decided to do an exec course on business because he understood for me to continue to expand, even though I'm, you know, really high up in the Nike structure, and he's produced a lot of really great work that's been hugely successful. For him to go that next level, he needed to understand these different disciplines in greater detail. And I think that I've seen the same thing that's true. I've worked on a bunch of IoT products over like the last half decade. The biggest problem with IoT is, you know, it's kind of fun to work on, right? You know, a bit like working on Web3 or, you know, building craft like websites and working with small brands, you get a lot of sort of exploration with it. But if you don't have the right marketing approach, we worked on some really good products, like products that could have been, you know, game changing in society.
Yeah.
But the cost to market that product to get, to drive the awareness was in the like tens of millions. And therefore the return of the investment would have taken like 3, 4, 5 years for us to get there.
Absolutely.
And actually, so the design, no matter how good it is, unless the overall marketing strategy works, if the business plan's not solid, you're kind of wasting your time. And that's something it's taken me, you know, being part of some companies pushing those sort of boundaries to get my head around and go, well, actually design needs to get business and business needs to get design for it to really be successful.
I totally agree with that. There is like, I totally agree with that, actually, Ash. There is like this fun story about Charles Darwin. He basically like when he actually started like to write like the theory of evolution around, he's like 30 years old, and he basically got stuck. So he started like to study like taxonomy and other kind of things. And incredibly, one day he basically studies like this book of like Thomas Malthus about microeconomics. So incredibly, he understands that like the evolution. And like 20 years later, he basically like wrote what basically become like, you know, the very famous theory of evolution. So there is like this TED talk where this guy, I don't remember the name, he talked about like slow motion multitasking. Now, basically, if you work on different fields, if you basically like, you know, stop like working on some things, you take a shower and then you start just reading a book about something, you can basically make your mind works in a functional way.
Yeah.
So you can basically like, you know, get the illumination and, you know, have like the sparks in your brain, and you can basically understand how to do things, even if you are just like focused on design or in cooking or architecture. So I think that having kind of like a wide range of knowledge, it's very, very important. That's basically like the key. I mean, if you think about the biggest ones, I mean, like Steve Jobs or, Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. Elon Musk like do everything. You know everything. Like you know how like basically to, you know, build a missile or you know, understand marketing and you know, design, engineering. It's crazy. I think that it's very game changing.
Mm. Yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right. And it's it's fascinating actually that and not more people in design see it that way. You know, I think we kind of, we always hear this challenge of businesses not understand what design does and how it brings value, right? And I've spoken a lot about this with a lot of guests on the show and like my teams over the last few years. And you kind of think, well, does design really get business? You know, you get young designers often, I say young people with, you know, a degree of naivety for lack of experience that want to just do everything that's for the very best end point for the customer, which is great, right? But it's almost like it tips them almost into a charity mindset, which is also great if you can afford to work in those fields.
Absolutely.
We need people to do it, right? But for businesses to understand design, they need to see there is value in it, right? And then you need to understand where those folks are coming from as well, and then bringing it together is what, you know, as you were saying, Jobs did that very well. Like he was a great communicator.
Absolutely.
Absolutely fascinated on the detail of what he was doing.
Yeah,
probably very, very hard to work for.
Yeah,
but he could bring all these people together, right, behind something. And you say Jeff Bezos has done something similar. Elon Musk, very controversial again, probably even more so with Twitter recently, right?
Absolutely.
But yeah, like he's as you. The thing is, he's taken a real interest in a lot of very disparate, by the looks of it, from most people's point of view, different brands with very different mission statements, and somehow, depending on how you look at the stock. At the stock prices of some of those businesses at the moment, it seems to be working quite well as a strategy. Like he's arguably very creative, right?
Absolutely.
I don't think we could debate that. He's very, very creative, and he's pushing the boundaries, sometimes not to everyone's liking, right? But he's challenging how things are done, which is kind of exciting.
Absolutely. Yes. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the other thing as well, I think I was really fascinated about is, again, a lot, well, I mean, I kind of want to dive into, but I want to talk about the Web3 project. I know we didn't speak about this beforehand. Can you tell us more about Web3, or is that behind closed doors for the time being?
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically like I'm basically like spent my last 6 months to understand better Web3 and NFTs and, you know, the blockchain, the DAO. And it was interesting because actually I thought like what everyone like thinking about right now, that basically like NFTs are kind of like a speculative bubble, and you know, all the projects are basically like fake projects where people can like lose money. I do think instead that basically it's kind of like just like a moment where we are asseting basically like the NFT space and Web3. It's incredible. It's not, I mean, it will be the future. We are not like knowing what like the metaverse is, but it's very innovative and game changing the way basically how the blockchain democratizing the new web community. Because if you think about Web1, in the Web1, we can actually like read something about the article, right? In the Web2, we started to, you know, also like write something and also write and read something about social media, right? So in the Web3 instead, it means that we own something. And for own something, what actually today we call NFTs, probably like tomorrow we are not called NFT anymore, but probably digital assets, because basically we are going to own something digital, like a digital piece. So it means that you are going to have like an investment in your pocket. And it's incredible how beautiful Web3 is, because as an independent, I could explore basically a lot of things like marketing, visual strategy, product management. It's very big, and like bring inside illustration, and you can bring inside animation. You can basically talk with a lot of people in the same time. And even if nobody like know anything about Web3 at the moment, we are actually like trying to build something, and it's a huge field where we are going to have a lot of fun. And if we can use it in the right way, it would be very, very, very functional. And it would be incredible. Even if we think about, for example, you know, like how you build a website. It means that basically, like, if you think about Warner Brothers that want like to showcase maybe like, you know, a very small showcase website for their film, you can basically say, okay, instead of like creating like kind of like a 2D, 3D website, I can create kind of like a VR experience where people can wear their visor and they can experience more deeply what basically like, you know, the website is. Or if you think about school and education, I think it would be game changing. I mean, when I was at school, I mean, like you need to take the bus to, you know, say, I mean, to see like the Colosseum or,
yeah,
I mean, any other things. I think that this will, you know, make the students get more close to what's the real meaning of like that statue or that story. You can basically like feel in your bones. And even if it's not real, I don't think it's important. I think that it's more important how you perceive that things and how you can basically like learn it better. Because actually, you know, when you're in school, you learn everything that is in, everything is theory. It's not practice. And you can find, you need to find your way to understand the things, because sometimes maybe teachers are not that good to explain to you, right? And so I think that this will basically like speed up the way on how students and, you know, perceive things. And I think it's game changing also in our field.
Yeah, you're right. It's really something that I've been sort of speaking with a few folks around, and everyone's sort of dabbling in Web3. I've had a few folks that have friends and old colleagues who've gone to work in companies, and everyone's kind of pulled out. And obviously there's been a lot of negative press because of some very, very bad actors, to say the least, you know, in the last few weeks and last few months. And Web3 in itself is really big, right? Like you've got anything from like NFTs, like a signed digital asset, and that has value, which sometimes is true. I mean, you know, it's interesting work because your dad was an artist, something that adds value for me. I find physical painting, I don't know why, but I feel like I'm more comfortable to buy that than a digital asset, which I feel like I could create or replicate easily, all the way through to the idea of decentralizing web.
Absolutely.
And that means the likes of Twitter and Facebook and Google and Amazon would have much less influence. And then it essentially becomes almost like a socialist approach right, to web access, and everyone can utilize it. And it's a really big field of spectrum. But I think what's a really interesting angle is the idea of how can those technologies, as you say, help with education and advancing, the next generation to learn and to access content in a way that's perhaps more tangible.
Absolutely. If you think about, like, for example, like the recently like AI tools that came out, ChatGPT and Midjourney. I mean, ChatGPT is insane. I mean, I tried and I just like, you know, learning, because you need to understand also how the tools work, but it's incredibly like game changing. It's very helping you in the process of the strategy. Mm-hmm. You can write down, for example, you can basically like write down what that line of code means, or you can basically put that line of code and understand actually what you did wrong. And it's not working just like the CRUM inspector console, but explain you literally what actually you did wrong and what you did right. And you can basically like build application inside. You can build business model. So I don't think that basically AI could basically replicate and replace our skills or our positions. I think instead that if you can use it in the right way, it can improve on the way you create things. Because it can help you in the strategy process, in the processing of design or development. And then you can obviously like, you know, put your own like, you know, ideas on it. But mm-hmm. I think that could it will basically like fast that up, like all the process that basically you usually use. And I think it's very powerful. Just like yesterday I just like said, read me down like a poem about the Roman Empire with the Eminem style. And he basically wrote me down like that kind of things. So I was like blown away with it. What is this? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
And it's an interesting, like talking about immersion tech, and AI is really interesting. When I went to a talk at the Alan Turing Institute a few years ago, and I was probably the most unqualified person. Most people all had doctorates in artificial intelligence and computer science. Probably to like 50% of it. You kind of realize how big those challenges are. But the big thing that I took away from that, and you know, like many, many things, right, is that we don't really have a consistent ethical framework for artificial intelligence or web-free technologies, or what, you know, Zuckerberg might want to do with the metaverse and what the impacts could be on society. And it's kind of hard to know unless you build it and test it and see how people respond. But I like the angle, you know, you've kind of got these two schools of thought. You've got artificial intelligence that is to replace and to plant humans' need in manufacturing, production, and creativity ultimately. Yeah. And on the other hand, you've got AI that is another school of thought, which is around computer assisted intelligence, which is focused on making sure that humans can do the things that are most important and humans are really great at, whereas computation and analysis, the software can do.
Yep.
And I think that the second thought of, okay, the software is going to help humans get things better, but we're not going to take away the things that we enjoy, like creativity, and that, you know, the things that give us meaning as a species, is
absolutely
a nice way to
I totally agree.
Now you mentioned, you know, you're working on your own web-free project.
Yeah.
Can you we've kind of like a big spectrum. Can you give us an inkling of where that's going, or is that specifically what you're developing under lock and key for now?
Yeah, no, it's basically like I'm building like a web free brand, even if like at the moment it's kind of like a it's difficult like to find investments when you talk about profile picture NFTs. It's not about just a profile picture. A profile picture is just like a piece of like the iceberg. Mm. But basically, it's a web-free project that involves cinema and media entertainment. We have in the team also like kind of like a couple of celebrities that are very like very well known in the cinema industry and Hollywood. The project is basically like a very wide range of products. So we are defining like the MVP and all the product roadmap that concerning one profile picture project that is called Taper Chat Club, and then like kind of like a platform where we are going to elevate artists. So the main goal of the web-free project is basically to elevate and make stand out all that people in the cinema industry that basically can get earnings. Mm-hmm. So basically elevate artists, and even if you are a director, a screenwriter, a producer, or a VFX artist, you can basically publish and share your work, gain visibility, and get earnings through the blockchain and the DAO.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I can see the use case for that, right? Because there's always like the infinite list of people and the credits, and you think, how do you actually find out about that body of work? And most of the time, you can't, right? And so that's really interesting. You can kind of actually see how that model might apply to other industries.
Yeah.
Particularly like design and technology as well.
Absolutely. Hopefully that's, I mean, like, we are basically like building all the marketing strategy at the moment. We are raising, like, we are in the first seed round. But I mean, we are passing down like a very bad moment in the Web3 space. So it's time to build. A lot of project came out. It's not about, like, people think about money. I don't think that you need to think about the money and how much like you'll throw prizes on OpenSea or whatever. It doesn't matter. What matters is what's the vision in the long run, what you can bring to the community. And our first goal is basically like to elevate artists and, you know, empower people. I think in general, it's the goal of the entire Web3 space. There are a lot of like, yes, speculative bubbles and a lot of shit out there. But I think that if you make things right, at the end, you're going to have a result. I mean, the effort commitment are always like an answer to this.
That's cool. That's good. Keep me posted. I'm going to be really curious how you guys get on. But I know we're kind of short on time. So I always like to kind of close out the show with a couple of reflective questions, let's say.
Yeah,
which I always think are good fun. And I know we kind of maybe semi-answered my first one, but I'll ask it again because I just love to see how people respond to this one. So if you could bottle it down, like distill into a sentence or, you know, a couple of paragraphs of text, whatever is the quantity here, like how do you define great design?
Right, that's a good question. For sure, like as I mentioned before, brand consistency, usability, responsiveness, aesthetics, functionality. But mostly, I think I develop my own method, but think, create, publish, I think it's the right way to deliver a great design. Like think in terms of like, you think about something, you can create something, you sketch that down, and then you can publish it to get feedback, and then you can actually you can learn from that. You can elevate your products, but especially I think that the most efficient way, even if it's kind of like weird, says I think that is stay organized, manage your time effectively, build relationships with other people, networking, have fun, have friends, having hobbies. I think that all that things can like basically define to you your work-life balance. And work-life balance is just like a balance. It's more like a mindfulness way to create things. I think it's very important.
Yeah. No, I hear that. And I feel like you're kind of answering my second question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, You know, the interesting thing is you're also a young guy, right? So it's interesting seeing how people look at this now, like sort of 10, 20 years on, 30 years on from this. But if you had a time machine, right, and you could travel back in time, let's say 10 years, whatever, to like your 18-year-old self, what advice would you impart at this stage?
That's a good question. I will say learn as much you can. If we talk about digital design and developer are constantly evolving fields. So I think it's important to stay up to date on the latest technology and techniques, take advantage of learning opportunities, whether it be through online courses, workshop, or on the job training, whatever. Practice always. Because I don't think there is a secret to creativity. You need to practice in every field you are on. And the more you practice, the better you will become. So takes on as many projects as you can and don't be afraid to try new things or make mistakes. Stay organized, obviously, and manage your time efficiently, as I said before. Network and build relationship. So with other designers or friends or developers or other industry professionals in your network. I think it's very important to find new job opportunities and create your network and getting feedback and reach out to all these people in the field. I would say travel a lot because knowing cultures is critical in the way you build your experience, right? And stay curious and keep on open mind. Learn cultures and meet international people, you know, trying new things. Don't be afraid, for example, like to ask for help, I would say, obviously.
Yeah,
if you get stuck on a project or are you unsure or not to approach something. I mean, initially when I start, I ask a lot. And I mean, even like, you know, a lot of times like people reach me out to ask things and I'm super glad like to respond if I have time. I think it can help like the way how they see things, right? So I think it's very important also like I ask for help don't be afraid in general. And at the end, like take initiative, that it's something very important. I think that as a digital designer and developer, I need to be responsible like for driving projects and coming up with new ideas. And so taking initiative through time, I think it was like a very, very good point to elevate myself and, you know, collaborate with great clients, collaborate with great agency and, you know, having fun, because I think that having fun is the right answer, right? I mean, if you're not having fun, probably it's not the right job for you, right? So take initiative for sure.
Cool, man. That was much deeper than I thought. It's almost like we could publish Nicola Miranda, like a book on life. There's a lot of really good content in there. Really good content. If you'd like that kind of question, like initiative, totally agree with that. And yeah, I love trying to, you know, taking fun as well. Like, you know, you've got to find passion in what you do, right? And that's really a really key takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which brings us nicely to
drive you on everything, right?
Yeah. I think, and again, my point is with this, it resonates through the work, right? And you see this with people who are passionate about their work. They love what they do. They work hard for it. And the consumer can feel it. And the companies that have people who are a little bit underwhelmed and a little bit bored, you see those products roll out. But thankfully, your passion's coming through all the work that I've seen from you.
Thank you so much.
Which brings us nicely to a close. Before we wrap up, if people want to get in touch, check out your portfolio, where can we send them? Have you got a website? What social media handles are useful for people to know?
Right. Yeah. You can just say hi on via email or reach me out like through LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter, I guess. It's always a pleasure.
Nicola, thank you again for taking the time to catch up today. It's been really cool.
Thanks, Josh, for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today on the Design Podcast. The show is produced by the Snook Brothers, hosted by Ashton Snook and edited by Eric Snook. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd appreciate you leaving a star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Stay connected with us on Instagram or LinkedIn. Our handle is design_podcast. Or check out the website designpodcast.co. Thanks again and take care, folks.